Hello and welcome back to the Smoking Snake Podcast. This is episode 89 of the only English language podcast all about Brazilian football. I'm your host, Peter, and we are joined, as always, by Henrik. And it's a very exciting time of year. We have the Brazilian Championship just around the corner. The continental competitions have kicked off. And just this past weekend, we had some serious hardware handed out. The state championships, more or less, are over. We have winners, we have losers, we have tears, and we have fisticuffs. It was a really exciting weekend, and say what you will about kind of the dragging on of the state championship, but that was really exciting, despite results not going our way. And that's kind of where I think we should start, Henrik, because we're going to talk about the state championships and a little bit about Libertadores at the end. But let's start off with the strongest state championship, the Campeonato Paulista. Palmeiras hosting Santos in the second leg here. Santos had the 1-0 aggregate lead, and things were turned around pretty quickly by Palmeiras in this final, which we watched together, which was awesome. So thanks for the hospitality, Henrik. But really quickly, let's jump into kind of how were you feeling before the game? You know, were you excited? It had been a long while since Santos had been in a final, and really that we thought that we might have a good opportunity of winning a trophy.
Yeah, and we kind of got here out of nowhere. We never expected to be in this situation, especially after 4 months of seeing the team get relegated for the first time, which is sad to talk about nowadays, but the team has changed so much ever since the Paulista began when we played that match away against Botafogo of Sao Paulo. The team looked completely changed, of course, with the new president and the new players. Everything has sort of restarted, the new mentality for the team. But yeah, I never expected the team to be here in the final. Anything getting qualified to the knockout stage of the Paulista would have been good enough for me for 2024. And then maybe 2025 or 2026, move on and reach the final and maybe win it all. But yeah, the team, I think, overachieved, which is always a good thing. We got a great result in the first leg. And going into the second game, I wasn't too optimistic because I always knew that Allianz Park is a tough stadium to play in. And if you look at the previous matches that we have played away from home, and one of them was at Arena Pacaembu last Brasileirão, I think, where we won 2-1 with a goal scored by Marcos Leonardo at the end. So we were sort of lucky there, but Palmeiras is never going to forgive us in the state championships, especially when there's a trophy on the table. They've done that numerous times. They did it in 2015 in Copa do Brasil. They did it in 2021 for Copa Libertadores. So they saw this opportunity and they took it. They scored in the first half, they scored in the second. And with the players, or Santos players, that went to Allianz Park hoping to win it based on that first leg and maybe play the penalty kicks, that was never something that we should have expected. So it ended pretty much as we thought. And I'm not sad about it. I'm happy that the team went to the final. So I would have loved to have lifted the trophy, but still at the end of the day, I'm very happy with the squad and how things are moving forward in the future.
Yeah, and I think some of that same sort of sentiment was felt by the Santos squad. I don't think anyone expected us to get there. You know, so many new players coming into the team. The squad integration happened, I think, a lot quicker than anyone could have imagined. And it's been great. But I think we were playing with, you know, won money, found money. And I think that kind of leaked into the players, especially when you saw how great Palmeiras were playing. And if we want to just quickly run through some of the thoughts and feelings while we were watching this game, I remember you saying that you weren't feeling optimistic. I was more optimistic than you. But yeah, it was crazy. We had some mistakes, but we had some opportunities as well. Guilherme had that chance, and I think Alfredo Morelos was, inches away from getting a foot or a leg or a knee on a cross from, I think, maybe even Otero, but he couldn't get there. Otero was too quiet, and all the guys that had been so great for us throughout this competition had been kind of just covered and just nerfed totally by these Palmeiras midfielders and defenders.
Yeah, and just to add on, I mentioned earlier that we've seen so many improvements by the squad comparing it to 2023. And one of those that I specifically saw, it was the defense, because throughout the state championships, even in the group stage, and also when we got to the knockout stages, our defense looks solid. And if you remember last year, we were always complaining about players like Joaquim, Messias, João Basso making mistakes, even Bauerman on before he left. So for the first time, we got to see 2 or 3 months of Santos actually defending well, which also made the keeper, João Paulo, be benefiting from that, because always if the defense is bad, the goalkeeper is going to look bad anyway. So João Paulo, I think, had a very good match. He's always been a good keeper. I saw some reports yesterday saying that maybe the club doesn't trust him anymore, and they're looking to bring back Rafael Cabral so that João Paulo would be the secondary keeper. But I don't think that would ever be a good idea. And although I love Rafael Cabral, he's doing very good at Cruzeiro. Still, João Paulo, in my opinion, is the number one for Santos and number one in Brasileirão all over the country.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of those reactionary takes. I think people were mad at the way João Paulo attempted Rafael Veiga's penalty, attempted to save his penalty. Rafael Veiga's was, not in the direct middle, but it was, in the middle section or the middle third, I would say, of the goal, maybe right on the edge of the middle third. And I think people really didn't like that when you get scored on down the middle. But listen, he made a choice to go a certain way. And I think when you think about the best shot stoppers in Brazil, João Paulo is always going to be up there. Maybe not the best with his feet, but definitely one of the best shot stoppers. And I thought he had a pretty decent game despite his criticisms. And I think that's such a prisoner of the moment take from people because, to be honest, we would have been much, we would have been relegated much earlier than the last game of the season last year. Had it not been for João Paulo.
Yeah, and João Paulo, of course, he had that little problem which caused us to have a penalty kick
Yeah.
for Palmeiras. Very unfortunate. And it starts in a very crazy way by the other side, Weverton, who makes a counterattack, probably assists the ball to Endrick. And that's when João Paulo steps forward. And I think it was Joaquim, the defender, which was waiting on the ball, hoping to fall outside, maybe for a goal kick, which wasn't meant to be. Enrique was right there.
Yeah.
And on the other side, our keeper got caught in two minds, didn't know what to do. And he sort of raised his hands, saying that, okay, I've gotten here. I'm going to stop. And whatever happens, happens. But I'm not fouling the opposition player. But Enrique falls into him. And João Paulo doesn't make a contact with the ball, which sees him get punished because the penalty is going to be awarded. I think, despite us saying that maybe the referee was unjust and the contact was so little and so away from the goal, at the end of the day, it's still a contact. You're dropping the player on the ground. So penalty was awarded, Palmeiras score. And that's when everything drops, the morality of the team, the confidence. And yeah, I feel like from there it just kept going downwards.
Yeah, and maybe last thing I'll say on Santos, I think that really hurt, especially because we were attacking before that. Weverton had that great goal kick to Endrick, and Endrick, I mean, I'm going to get into this in a second, but he was superb. He was absolutely as advertised. I mean, this kid keeps living up to extremely high expectations. He was playing maybe off to the side a little bit more so Flaco Lopez could have the central role. And even then, he's taking on defenders. He's causing havoc on the back line for Santos. And even in that goal, I mean, Joachim tries to stop him. He can't. He Endrick, he gets around him somehow. He's even just to close that gap, to get to the ball, to be in contention for the ball. I mean, he's just an incredible player, and that's just. I mean, he's been insane this year, and he's going to be great, I think, for Real Madrid. But Santos, I think that mentality that they've had, a so much more healthy mentality, competitive mentality, this season, and I think it just got to them the moment. I think they got a little bit too happy that they were here in the final. They not to say that they gave up, but they certainly, I don't know if they had the belief in themselves, especially after that first goal, that they could come back and win this. And some of that, I'm sure, just the quality of players. You look, obviously Palmeiras has a better squad. Some of that is the fitness. Palmeiras, much more fit. But at the end of the day, I really think there was a little bit more of an improvement in the mentality that could have been had for those Santos players. But all in all, I think it was an extremely important campaign for Santos, another step in the right direction, the reconstruction they're calling it of Santos, and qualified for the Copa do Brasil, which they're not going to be in this year. So for 2025, they will be back in Copa do Brasil, and they should be a really powerful force in Serie B.
And again, I'm gonna add something else a bit for this game. Of course, we talked a lot about the first goal coming from the penalty kick, but the second one from Aníbal Moreno, he gets past a couple of our players and unfortunately sends the ball in the back of the net. But after that, the team had 23 minutes to push forward, and they never did that. They never threatened Palmeiras. Maybe we had a chance or two, which were shots taken outside the box, but nothing that would definitely threaten Weverton and Palmeiras overall. And it just makes you wonder, because we played throughout the state championship for a couple months since January. We played here in this exact stadium and we lost 2-1, so we scored a goal back then. We played against São Paulo, we scored in Morumbi, we won that game. We played against Corinthians at home, we won that game as well. So we also played against Rebel Bragantino. We s lost the first game 2-1, but we won 3-1 the second match in knockouts. So at least why not score one goal here when the team definitely needs it? You got the players there, Guilherme on the left, many players, many additions to the year on the other sides, and the strikers, Morelos. So the force is always there, and I feel like the team, if anything, they're gonna be leaving that stadium, or they actually left the stadium thinking that we should have at least gotten one. And if they had managed to gotten that first goal, it would have been 2-0 for Santos. So maybe the best thing that Palmeiras would have done was tie the match, go to penalty kicks, and anything could have happened from there. But again, at the end of the day, I'm happy to have reached the final, and hopefully next or upcoming years, we can win this trophy.
Yeah, and we spent a lot of time talking about Santos because Palmeiras, everyone knows if you're listening to this podcast how great they are. All their players showed up, I thought, were really great. The smother in defense, there weren't a lot of opportunities, even when Julio Furch came on. There were just, and they're always just such a threat. It's such a hard thing to do, to go on and push for a goal against Palmeiras, because they'll hit you on the counterattack. Before you have any idea what's going on, especially when you got Endrick, and even Flaco Lopez up front. Lazaro, I think, had a great game, despite maybe being a little bit quiet. I think he was really effective on that other wing. And like you said, the defense was great. So yeah, Palmeiras, three in a row. Very important trophy, or third win for them. This Leila and Abel duo, dynamic duo, is just working wonders for them. Leila out in the media today, talking about new signings. Sounds like there's not going to be any more coming. Bruno Rodriguez is going to come back. Dudu is going to come back. They're going to add Romulo. So I mean, this team is going to be great this year, and they're going to be great for a long time. Lastly, I just want to say, Andriki, we've already sung his praises, but I think this game showed me another side to him, which is the leadership side. He wants the pressure. He wants to be the one who's changing the game, who wants to be the one who's that game breaker. Doesn't mind the pressure. People have said it before, of course, but he's just such a special player, and we're definitely going to miss him once he leaves in come June. Or July, I guess July 1st. All right. Top goal scorers in Paulista, Flaco Lopez with 10. Palmeiras move up to second all time, 26 wins in total for them of this competition. Player of the competition, Endrick, no surprise there. Revelation or newcomer, breakthrough talent of the competition, Romulo from Novo Horizontino. We've known for probably a month and a half now, maybe more, that he's joining Palmeiras very soon. So, yeah, another great Campeonato Paulista in the books. All right, let's move to the Campeonato Carioca, the Rio State Championship. Flamengo hosting Novo Iguaçu. They demolished them 3-0 in the first leg, and this was pretty much a formality. Bruno Henrique added a goal late to make it 4-0 on aggregate. Not a lot to say, in my opinion, on the game. Flamengo, obviously the better team, probably the best team in Brazil right now. So I think we have to spend a lot of time talking about Novo Iguaçu, what a campaign they had. Because just to put this into perspective, this is a very newly founded team. They're in the fourth division of Brazilian football, and they go on this incredible run, beating Vasco, beating I think a whole host of other teams before the final. They were or no, they this whole year they've been the only team to score against Flamengo. It's just been an incredible season for them, and though they finished second, I think they really captured the hearts of a lot of people all around Brazil and those watching from abroad. So it was really cool to see. Chichi, I mean, all class, this guy gives his winner's medal to the coach of Novo Iguaçu, Carlos Victor. And yeah, I think just the compelling story here is how exciting Nova were this year, and the players and the coach and what they're looking on for. Carlos Victor, like I said, the coach, it's come out, he's looking for his license. I think he's probably going to get sponsored by a club or some sort of business person to go out and get this license so they can coach in Serie A and B. Carlinhos, it's already come out, the star striker, signed for Flamengo a day after the final. He's going to add to their ranks and help fill that gap now that Gabigol is suspended. Bill, the former Flamengo man, actually looks close to joining Vasco on loan from Dnipro, the Ukrainian team that actually owns his rights right now. Fabricio, the goalkeeper, very veteran goalkeeper, joining Internacional. And then Iago, a young star in attacking midfield, he's on loan right now to Nova, but I think he's probably going to get called back to Fluminense. So there's going to be kind of a network of these Nova guys that are going to go on to bigger and better things. And I think when we look back at 2024, we're definitely going to remember Novo Iguaçu.
Yeah, and so did we last year when Volta Redonda had an impressive run, but looking back to Serie D, it didn't really seem so. I hope it's gonna be like that for Nova Iguaçu. Hopefully they jump up division soon, but I doubt it, especially when so many players that you mentioned leave the club not months or years, but days after the final. So Flamengo on the other side, what an impressive run they had. One goal conceded throughout the whole campaign. And simply unbelievable what Chichi has been doing to the club ever since he took over. I mean, do you remember the times when we used to talk about Vitor Pereira and so many other shit managers that kept coming and leaving Flamengo and doing nothing? So I'm glad that they're in the position where they are because they deserve it. They deserve to be among the top two or three in Brasileirão, not just to have Palmeiras winning it every year. So hopefully we get to see something different. Top goal scorers, Pedro of Flamengo had 11 goals. He had an impressive campaign as well throughout the year, scoring goals, penalties. He's just been beautiful, wonderful, and just reminded me of the Pedro that we used to see at the end of 2022. Carlinhos for Nova Iguaçu, ending up second with 8 goals. Lele of Fluminense had 6, and Pablo Vegetti of Vasco ranked in 8th place with 4 goals. So not too many goals from him, but I'm sure we're gonna get to see more of them in the Brasileirão. And also the winners list: Flamengo now wins the 38th trophy, now 5 trophies ahead of Fluminense, who have 33. Vasco da Gama in 3rd place with 24, and then Botafogo going back to back years in Taça Rio and having only 21. So they need to step up their game if they want to win a couple of state championships in the future.
Yeah, and the player of the competition, Georgian Dejascareta, no surprise there. Probably one of the best players in Brazil. And the young player of the tournament, Iago from Nova Iguaçu, who we've already touched on. You might get to see him in a Fluminense shirt very, very soon. All right, let's move it south to the Campeonato Gaúcho. Grêmio taking on Juventude, despite an early goal from Gilberto. Grêmio find 3 in a row, including 2 quick ones before the first half ended. Cristaldo Diego Costa, and then Nathan adds a third late. This gives them a 3-1 win and increases their total of 43 trophies. Internacional with 45, excuse me. And then Juventude just with the 1. So I think, again, like the Flamengo match, more of a formality. But again, Juventude are still a pretty big side in the grand scheme of things. And it was a test for Grêmio, at least for a while.
For a second, or actually for 40 minutes, I actually thought that Juventude were going to come up as winners. Of course, tying the first leg 0-0 at home and then scoring in the first half against the big rival away from home was always good. So they had a good game. Then Cristaldo, Diego Costa, and Nathan Fernandes came back, scored 3, ensured Grêmio had that win. And Grêmio now win their 7th or 8th in a row, which made it 43, only 2 behind Internacional. So Internacional should be a little scared. I think the last time they won it was 2012, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, it's been a long time since Inter has really performed, not even making it to the finals last year and this year. So they need to improve and perform better, as they used to do back in time in the Campeonato Gaúcho. In Campeonato Mineiro, Cruzeiro lost at home 3-1 against Atlético Mineiro. They scored after the first leg ended 0-0. The first half of the second leg also ended 0-0. They got a goal and they thought, well, now we're probably going to lift the trophy. But Hulk and Gustavo Scarpa had other things in mind. They brought the remontada, lifted the trophy in the opposition stadium. So Atletico wins it in back-to-back years, and doing much better than Cruzeiro have been in the recent years.
Yeah, and it was all queued up, I think, for a Cruzeiro victory. I think I predicted that on the last podcast. I can't remember exactly, but I thought it's at home. You had R9, Ronaldo, the phenomenon in the stands watching his beloved team that he owns. You had a honoring ceremony for Marcelo Moreno, who signed like a one-day contract or something with Cruzeiro to retire as a Cruzeiro player. And so it was all set for this big victory in BH. Both teams actually had some first half chances. Paulinho and Hulk, especially dangerous, which you'd expect. But then finally, a defensive error in the second half, and Cruzeiro pounce on it. Matheus Pereira, a great assist, finds Matheus Vital. And he heads it home to give them the 1-0 lead. in the game. But then Atlético Mineiro would really show why they should be considered one of the best teams in Brazil. We haven't quite seen that. That's why Falcao got the sack. They brought in Gabriel Milito, and I don't know what he said to these guys, but they got it together. Kind of a weird first goal there from Saravia. I don't know if you saw this, Enric. He did a header. It almost looked like he's jumped straight up. It like hit the top part of his head, looped over the keeper, and ended up in the back of the net. Kind of a bizarre goal there, but if that's what he meant to do, that's very, very impressive. A handball on a cross meant that Hulk scored that penalty, and all of a sudden, within, I don't know, 17 minutes from when Cruzeiro had scored, they were already down after 2-1. And then, just to add insult to injury, Cruzeiro goal, I think it was Juan Dineno scored, waved for offsides, and then Gustavo Scarpa finally finds the back of the net for Atlético Mineiro. He scores his first for the club. And that would lead Atletico to a 3-1 win. I think that was 3-5 on aggregate in favor of Galo. So another big win for them. And they look like, under the right management, that they could be a very powerful force in this year's Brasileirão.
Yeah, I mean, they got the players, Hulk scoring 7 goals in the championship so far. And other than that, Mascherani had 6 for América Mineiro despite transferring over to different clubs. So he actually did great in that state championships.
Yeah, I had to double check that a few times. But yeah, he finished second despite only probably playing what, half the season, something like that. Player of the competition is Hulk as well, although I think the fans voted on it and they voted Matheus Pereira. So a little bit of contrast there. But wanted to talk really quickly about one of the some of the fallout from this game. The coach of Cruzeiro, Lacramon, was fired this morning as we record April 9th, the Tuesday. I guess not squarely based on this result. There were some differences between him and the board as well. It's all history now. Lacamoine is out, and I believe Fernando Sobral is going to fill the void there. He's a youth coach, I think, for Red Bull Bragantino. Before that, for Cruzeiro, where he worked with an executive for Ronaldo's company, R9's company, had success even this year in the Copinha, brought Cruzeiro's youth team to the final. And I love that his last name is Zebra, which is so close to the word zebra, of course, which in Brazil is a reference to the underdog winning. So I'm looking forward to our next episode's title being, Zebra brings out the zebra or something to that effect. So we'll see if he can actually do that. But again, this year's Campeonato Mineiro, I know we've kind of shit on it in the past about their kind of whack rules on the final and how they decide a winner based on if the two teams in the final draw. But this year's, I think, was really entertaining, and two clubs that I think are going to be fun to watch in this year's edition of the Brasileirão. Campeonato Paranaense, again, not much to be surprised at here. Atlético Paranaense winning 3-0, excuse me, wow, can't talk, over Maringá, 4-0 on aggregate. All the big boys popping out. Fernandinho, Pablo, and Mascherani scoring the goals for Atletico. Pablo finishing second, actually, in the competition's goal scorers. Enric, our old buddy Robson, finishing first, 11 goals. We talked about him quite a bit last year for Coritiba, scoring just tons of penalties. And he's added again here, 11 goals in 14 matches. Not a bad return. And we'll have to watch him in Serie B this year.
Yeah, I mean, Robson, great to see him top of the list, but I'm actually looking at the table and feeling a little bit sad because there's a name that is missing there and it goes by Vitor Roque. He was on that list last season, and then now he's gone. And in the whole state of Paranaense, four out of those five players are above the age of 30. The Robson 32, Pablo 31, as same thing with the Londrina player, Clayson Rosa, and Mascagni also 30. So hopefully we get to see many future kids playing well in the state, and hopefully many of them perform well for their respective clubs in the future. Curitiba now still top of the state champion number of the trophies won, 39. Atlético Paranaense with 28. They need at least 11 to tie, unless Curitiba wins one in the meantime in 11 years, which is very likely. So yeah, that's about it for the big five state championships. On other state championship, Catarinense, Criciúma tied 1-1 at home against Brusque, which meant that they would lift the trophy. They won 3-1 aggregate. So great to see players like Adair, former Italian national team, Sampdoria, Inter Milan, Sao Paulo player. So great to see him there and lift another trophy. I think last season this final was way crazier. If you remember Criciúma Avaí, maybe it was a different opponent, but they went to penalties, and we talked about this like 11, 10, and 10 shootout. So it was
Yeah.
just insane.
Yeah, that was insane. Yeah, Criciúma, a good omen for them as they enter Serie A for the first time in quite some time. And yeah, you mentioned Adair joining his childhood club, Yannick Bolasie as well. So some interesting players that we'll see if they can have an impact, although they're kind of approaching the end of their careers. And Serie A, Fortaleza and Serie A tied 1-1. Senate depends. And Sierra would win 3-2. But really, the story in that one is the violent confrontation after the whistle, multiple reds, and kind of the traditional brawl between local rivals broke out. And actually, a security guard got a huge mark down his side, reportedly from a kick from Thiago Gallardo. I guess he kicked him in the ribs, and you can kind of see this cleat mark down the side of his body. Looks pretty bad. Thiago Gallardo also in the news. I don't think it's that related, but he looks to be joining Goiás after terminating his contract with Fortaleza. So he is headed out there. In Goiás, Atlético Goianiense beat Vila Nova 5-1 on aggregate. In Bahia. Bahia get defeated. Lots of hype around Bahia, remember? They go down to Vitória. Vitória tie Bahia away in the second leg, meaning they win 3-2 on aggregate. And nice little tire pump here for us Santos fans. Wagner Leonardo, a Santos Academy grad, scored the fixture-winning goal, the only goal of the game for Vitória. So we can kind of pat ourselves on the back and know that despite not playing for Santos, he's still making an impact.
And also on the Campeonato Pernambucano, Sport Recife lifted the trophy. They beat Náutico 2-0. And it's been a long time since Náutico performed, not only in Brasileirão, I think participants in 2013 or 14, but currently in third division after falling out in 2022. I don't know if they're going to come back, but I hope they will. I would love to see him back in Serie A one day. So hopefully we get to see them soon. In Campeonato Alagoano, a team that plays in Serie B right now, CRB 1-3-1 against ASA. So 4-1 on aggregate, they lift the trophy. In Campeonato Amazonense, last episode, I made a mistake and I said that Amazonas were eliminated, which was wrong. They were not eliminated in quarterfinals. It's just that their state has some weird rules of first phase, second phase, third phase. So even if you lose the second phase, you still make it to the final, which I don't know why. But they'll play on Sunday against Manaus, which is the team that have that amazing stadium, which countries used for the World Cup in 2014. In Campeonato Brasiliense, Ceilândia won it against Capital. So both of these teams will play Serie D in 2025, and the only way we will get to see Brasiliense in top four divisions will be if they qualify to the third division of this year, which is going to be very difficult for them. I hope it will, though. In Campeonato Mato Grossense, Cuiabá lifted the trophy after beating União Rondonópolis 2-0. In Campeonato Paraense, first leg, Paysandu beat Remo, huge derby, and they will have the return leg on Sunday. And they will also be matching up in Copa Verde. They actually did. The first leg ended 0-0 in Paysandu's home, so the return leg will be tomorrow, so Thursday or Wednesday. So yeah, Paulista A2. Last time we talked about Portuguesa Santista and Noroeste. Noroeste actually beat them in penalties, so they're going to be participating in the first division of Paulista next year. And alongside will go Velo Clube with a fast player, as Thomas Freitas mentioned a couple months ago or last year in the podcast. They beat Juventus 1-0 on aggregate. So unfortunately, both sides that I would have loved to see didn't make it to the Paulista of next year. The final first leg will be played in Nereida Stadium. It will be tomorrow. So let's wait and see how that's going to go. And hopefully, it will be a fun game for both of these teams.
All right, yep. And we've got some final stages in Copa do Nordeste and the Copa Verde, as you've already mentioned. Some pretty interesting games. I think the headliner there in Copa do Nordeste is Sport Recife versus Ceará. And that's going on the 10th of April, which is tomorrow as we record this. All right, so that should be more or less our coverage of the Brazilian State Championships. Say what you will. Again, I'm repeating myself from the beginning of the episode, but say what you will about the competitions as they stand in their current structure. But we just had a very exciting weekend of football, and I'm pretty thankful for it, despite me criticizing the state championships, from time to time. All right, so moving from probably the most less important, the least important competition in Brazil or Brazilian teams playing in this year to one of the most important, Copa Libertadores. It got underway last week, and the Brazilian sides were out in force, though they did not perform. Really, the big storyline coming out of match day one in the group phase is the lackluster performances from Brazilian clubs. Now, of course, this happened last week, so before the weekend of all the state championships. So, of course, yes, teams fielded lesser squads. They had youth players. They were tired. They were resting players. Of course, this is, mostly the reason. And I think that, you shouldn't read too much into these results, but we'll go through them quickly. And maybe, Enric, if you want to go back and zero in on highlights or important parts that you have. But Millonarios defeated, or excuse me, tied with Flamengo. It'll feel like a win. The Strongest defeated Gremio, of course, at their high altitude fortress in Bolivia. That's a 2-0 win over the Tricolor from Brazil. Botafogo hosting Junior from Colombia. Botafogo losing that 1-3. You predicted that one. Carlos Bacca scoring two goals for Junior. And Botafogo losing at home, especially in the three goals in the first 40 minutes. Not great. San Lorenzo, team of the Pope, ties 1-1 with Palmeiras. Alianza Lima ties 1-1 with Fluminense. Marquinhos scores his first goal for the Rio de Janeiro club. Caracas, finally, a Brazilian wins, defeated by Atlético Mineiro, 1-4 in Venezuela. And then Talleres beating São Paulo in Argentina, 2-1. So pretty poor showing there for the Brazilian clubs. Enric, like I said before, I'm not too worried about it. I'm sure they're going to come storming back. What was your take on the Brazilian clubs in the first match week of the group phase?
Well, some of those matches were played, or all of them actually, in the middle of the state championship. So some teams were preparing for that second leg more than worrying about the Copa Libertadores or Sudamericana, which we'll be talking about soon. But some teams had everything to play for. For example, beginning with Flamengo, they get a goal away from home. Of course, Misionários is a tough team when it comes to the Intercontinental Cups. I've seen them in Colombia, and every time I see them, they're losing or tying matches. So I don't know how they tie here against Flamengo. Anyways, so Flamengo goes one goal up after their man 3 minutes ago got sent off. So now Flamengo has a goal, has a man in advantage. Why not score a second? And what do you know? Misionários comes back, ties the match, gets a point out of them, which is fine for the Brazilian team, but still, you should be getting every opportunity and converting into goals, because this is why teams are so are performing well, and they're not performing well, because they do mistakes like these, and one day they're winners of the competition, and the next day they lose to Olympia in the knockout stages, which I don't really like. Next game, the Strongest beat Grêmio. As you said, pretty understandable. Grêmio had to play in the final against Juventude, and they're playing away from home, so the Strongest get a winning result in high altitude. The next match, Botafogo, having nothing to play for because, well, nothing in terms of the state championships because they were already done. So they are playing at home as one of the few Brazilian teams having that opportunity to do so. They concede 3 goals in first half. Insane. And as soon as Hugo got that goal in the 43rd, I thought, well, if there's anything that Botafogo learned last season is how to come back after a 3-goal deficit from the other teams that played them. And I thought they would at least get one back in that second half, and maybe even a third to tie the match 3-3, but wasn't the case. Botafogo was so poor, and the fans are going to be left so disappointed as the players. But yeah, they deserve to do much better, and they should have, because the club is too big to lose 3-1 at home as the opening match of the Libertadores, which the president has been dying to see ever since he took over.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in and just emphasize what you just said. Everything was all queued up for them. Their grand return to the Libertadores. And for me, this is by far the worst result a Brazilian team has had so far in this competition. And yeah, it's just a little bit embarrassing. I just can't help but what to wonder. Jean Textor was I think some of what he's doing with the allegations and especially last season, I think some of it was a calculated, shield of his players. And I'm wondering now, is the off-pitch drama affecting the squad too much now? Because this should have been queued up for a win, if not a draw. I mean, Junior, of course, are a powerful team, but the Colombian league in comparison has gone down the tubes with in comparison to Brazil. Botafogo should be able to handle Junior, especially when it's at home and their grand return to Libertadores after so long. But yeah, just didn't happen. And they could be tired from the Taça Rio. There could be any number of excuses, but really they should be doing better. And maybe this will be kind of like a Saudi Arabia versus Argentina moment where they get punched in the face early on, and later they can kind of overcome that adversity and go on a run. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, and the other matches, Palmeiras tying 1-1, great result for Palmeiras. I thought they were going to lose, which seemed to be the case until the 81st minute when Pique Reis got that equalizer. San Lorenzo looked like the better team, and Palmeiras, despite people saying that they're going to travel with the B team, they had like five or six players that were starters against Santos in that first leg, so at least they get a draw here. Fluminense also get a draw, not bad. So Marquinhos, I'm happy to see him score after the seasons he's been having with Arsenal. Glad to see him back in Brazil, and hopefully he can regain his form. Atlético Mineiro overachieving, scoring 4 away from home. I don't care how bad Caracas are. Atlético Mineiro get the job done as they should. They concede 1, which is fine, but again, they're winning matches away from home, and they're probably going to do the same when they play home at home. Tajeres win 2-1 against Sao Paulo. Again, Sao Paulo, just like Botafogo, having no other matches in between. So maybe they should have gotten at least a draw. But Tajeres is such a good side and they scored two. Luciano get one back. So again, I don't think this is a bad result. The worst result, as we mentioned, would be Botafogo losing 3-1 and the Flamengo not being able to win the match against Misionários. And then Sudamericana, it's sort of the same thing. Brazilians playing at home, playing away. State championships in between. Some of them win, some of them lose. Internacional and Cruzeiro draw 0-0 away from home, which was also good for them, especially for Cruzeiro, who had to play Atlético Mineiro in the final, which we talked about earlier. So, yeah, I don't know if you have anything to add, Peter, for those matches, but I feel like it's gone the way we expected. Cuiabá and Corinthians both tying, Atlético Paranaense scoring a lot of goals against Sportivo, a team which many people consider to be weak. Mastroianni getting 2 goals. Fortaleza winning 2-0 away from home against Sportivo Trinidense. But the surprise for me was Rebel Bragantino. They were playing at home. Vitinho scored one in the 45th, and that was pretty much it. And if Coimbra Unido from Chile would have gotten one back, I don't think the situation would have looked good. In my opinion, Red Bull, despite them being good in Brasileirão last year, this year they haven't been too promising. They played the Libertadores qualifiers, in which they lost, or they won the first match against Aguilas in penalties. And then on the second game against Botafogo, the game was so difficult. And now they win matches by 1 goal, which was never the Red Bull Bragantino that we got to see last year, destroying teams from all over the continent. We got to see 6-0, 7-0. So maybe it's too early to judge, but so far I'm not too convinced by this team. So let's wait and see what can happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's too early to judge, and there's a lot of, I mean, we've even talked about how much you can take out of the state championship, but I might even extend that really to maybe the first couple group games of Libertadores. You don't really know what you're gonna get from these teams in the Brasileirão until much later in the season, I would argue, because even as we saw last year, it's perfect. Perfect example. It's like it's almost like you're playing a two-part season like they do in Mexico with an opening and closing tournament where it's really sometimes a tale of two tournaments. So yeah, just not a whole lot to add there. Brazilian teams, I think, doing a little bit better in the Copa Sudamericana, but still maybe not in that top gear. And I wouldn't expect to see that anytime soon. Okay, that is the end of the episode. Thanks everyone so much for listening. Really appreciate it. Coming up this week, we've got some more content coming out. We've got our big Brasileirão prediction episode. The season starts on Sunday, which is so exciting. And I just can't wait. We're going to do Serie A, we're going to do Serie B, we're going to do Serie C, we're going to do Serie D because we're insane. And we love Brazilian football, and we think you should too. So, thanks everyone so much for listening. Look out for that predictions episode coming in the next few days, and look out on Sunday for the opening day of the Brasileirão 2024. It's going to be a great season. Until then, have a great night.